Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time to take you behind the scenes in Smash Mouth.
Cuts across, he scores!
This is the Preds Official Podcast with Thomas Willis and Brooks Bratton.
Powerful move from back of the net.
On Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome to the Predators Official Podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app. Episode 76 of the POP. Welcome to March, meteorological spring. Alongside Thomas Willis, I'm Brooks Bratton, both of us of NashvillePredators.com. Calvin Smith pushing buttons as always.
For episode 76, I of course think of Pernell Carl Sylvester Stuban. I thought you were about to say, like, welcome back to the Preds Official Pod Izzy or something like that in his honor.
Sure, Pod Izzy.
Who would have thought? Alexis he was Lizzie. Our first ever guest on the POP. Sadly, no longer, or maybe happily, depending on who you are, no longer a member of the Nashville Predators. At episode 76.
TBT.
But, you know, he gets a shout out here.
He does. Shout out to PK. Shout out to all of you, our fantastic listeners. Welcome back to another episode. Lots of content to get to. We've got a great phone call coming up with TSN hockey insider Pierre LeBrun. Talking trade deadline. Talking general managers meetings. Talking Roman Josi and David Poile. Lots of good stuff coming up with Pierre a little bit later on. The Predators snap a three-game skid. They beat the Stars to start a home-and-home series. A five-game road trip coming up. Lots of playoff talk to get to. Those positionings, the standings. What are things looking like as we enter the final full month of the regular season? Plus the Milwaukee Minute and some of your Twitter questions as well. And also, it's been quite a week here in Nashville and Middle Tennessee. Nashville strong is what we've been mentioning a lot of over the last few days. The Predators coming together to help their community after some tornadoes impacted the state, including one here in Nashville. Lots to get to as well. So, as we said, it was quite a few days here in Middle Tennessee. The Predators, they play Monday night against the Edmonton Oilers. We head out to the airport. We leave. We're in the air at 11. When we land in Minnesota, by the time we do that at about 12:30, quarter to 1 in the morning, back here in Nashville, awful news. A tornado touches down in Davidson County, F3 at points, which means winds in excess of 165 miles an hour in some areas. It was on the ground for over 60 miles, made its way into Wilson County. Two people passing away in Nashville. Thousands throughout Middle Tennessee were impacted by the storm. A second tornado then touched down in Putnam County, about an hour and a half east of Nashville. More lives were lost in Cookeville with that catastrophic damage. None of the Predators players were directly affected in terms of damage to property or anything like that. Nobody lives in the areas that were hit, but they, as well as every Nashvillian, was impacted in some way. How do you, Thomas, what, I mean, this, you've lived here all your life, and this is something that can happen in the South, and the Predators certainly have done their part over the last couple of days to help repair the community and get that big win on Thursday night, which we'll touch on more in just a moment.
Sure.
But really just an eye-opening week and something you never really expect to happen. And it really has been a sad week, a tough week to see a lot of people suffer, but also an inspiring week to see how the community has come together over the last few days.
Right. It's nice to be able to see in the days since just the concerted effort that's been given, the monetary funds, the time as well. But you're right. Back to the early morning hours of Tuesday. I know the word surreal gets overused a lot, I would say. But in a sense, I mean, I was awoken, for example, to the sirens, to the tornado sirens. And you kind of get this false sense of security of like, oh, it'll be fine. This happens. It's not a big deal. And then, because I'm in southeast Nashville, so again, north of me. But then you look into it and you're like, oh, no, this is real. This is happening. And just for me personally, I go back to I went to Union University. And so in 2008, that college was basically destroyed by tornadoes while my brother was there. So that was a semester before I went. And no lives were actually lost. I mean, just a total miracle in that instance. But it makes you feel powerless, which I think in a sense is maybe a good thing for us to feel as humans sometimes. I think sometimes we maybe think we're a little bit more in control of things than we are. And I just would hope that for those of us who just have watched on the news and have maybe felt it, but especially for those of us in more the Middle Tennessee area, I would hope that it gave you at least a moment to pause and be grateful for those, you know, your loved ones, for those who are around you, and to maybe you know, even take a moment to consider, like, you know, why am I still here? Like, what's my purpose? Like, why was I able to survive this and make a difference out of that? Don't just have that feeling for a week and then be like, oh, it'll be fine. So, and then I know we want to move on from this topic, but I would say that I will commend the Preds and the Titans and some of these other organizations, the Sounds, who've already stepped up immediately, but then more so for the focus that they're going to do in the long term, because it's definitely one of those things. I was even texting with one of our colleagues with the Dallas Stars, and she was saying that they had a tornado just, I think, at the start of the season. I think it actually even hit Ben Bishop's house, for example. But anyway, she was saying, like, you have that influx of care and intentionality in the first week. Well, but it is months and sometimes even years till things are fixed. So credit to those organizations for thinking about the long term and for being able to make an impact there as well. So, again, I am grateful to be safe, and especially you and I had coworkers that, I mean, two blocks within the damage. So, again, how quickly you send a text and all of a sudden you're like, well, they're not responding. Like, are they not responding because they don't have power or they're asleep, or is this a bigger deal than I thought? So, I too am grateful.
There's a number of folks who we know that were very close, a couple that were affected. I myself, I live with, there's six of us in total that live in the same complex east of the city, and we didn't have power for 3 days. We just got it back on Thursday, but right across the main road, there's a neighborhood with some streets in it that are just totally decimated. Mm-hmm. And if that tornado's on the other side of the road, who knows? So it really makes you just think and be grateful for what you have, and because it could have been so much worse for a lot of us. And you know, it's tough to see our neighbors that are really struggling. Yeah. And that's where the community outreach comes in. As you said, it's not just a 1 or 2 day event. It's going to be weeks and months and years before these folks are back up on their feet. So that's where organizations like ours and others around the city and just general everyday people volunteering money, time, donations, whatever they can do to help this city get back on its feet.
Sure. And I guess I'm preaching to myself here as well. I'm not trying to sound like I have it figured out, but I guess finally I would just want to say, like, essentially what you were just alluding to, and that is how quickly and easy it is to say, oh, it's just stuff. You know, I lost some stuff. Like, it's not a big deal. Well, don't lose that. Don't lose that in a month and then, you know, get back to your everyday pattern of life. So understand what's important in this thing we call life and be able to cherish it. So back to hockey, because that's the program that's generally what we discuss on the show.
For sure. So the Preds wanted to do their part. They got home. We got home really late Tuesday night, early Wednesday morning, and it was a scheduled day off, at least from on-ice activities, but the players and coaches saw that as a perfect opportunity. They got out into the community on Wednesday, helped collect some donations at the Nashville Community Resource Center. By the way, we'll have information on how you can help a little bit later on as well. And then Thursday night's game against Dallas arrives, and it was certainly an important matchup on the ice when it came to hockey, but it meant so much more than that, too. Here's what Matt Duchene had to say prior to Thursday's game as the Predators were gearing up for what was certainly a massive contest in so many ways.
Today it was nice to get out and make some donations and give some time, and most of the guys on the team were there doing the same thing, and just it was amazing to see this community come together. Just car after car after car pulling up, opening their trunk and just being like, you know, just loaded with stuff. It's just amazing to see. Obviously, you know, there's still a lot to go, but the way that this community's come together is impressive, and it makes me very proud to be a resident here.
The Preds knew what it meant to the community, the city. They wanted to win that one for a lot of reasons on Thursday night, and they did that. Played one of their better games in recent memory, shut out the Dallas Stars by a 2-0 final. 33 saves for Juuse Saros, his 10th career shutout. Philip Forsberg and that gentleman, Matt Duchene, score power play goals as the Predators get to 74 points in the standings to stay right in the thick of things, and it is thick in the wild card race, and was for the city too, and the Preds were proud to give their community a reason to smile after a tough few days. I want to hear from Matt Duchene again, and then John Hines as well, after the fact on Thursday night, and how they felt that they were really able to help people just escape for a couple hours and give them something to smile about.
You know, we've been grinding. It's kind of funny. It's maybe a little foreshadowing. I mean, we've been grinding hard this year. Our slogan right now is embrace the grind, and now the city's kind of going through something like that, where people are grinding and trying to get through, and it's inspiring to us, just the strength that the city's showing, and like I mentioned this morning, just people yesterday, you know, showing up and donating so much of their time and money and buying stuff for the city and for people who are ailing right now. And, you know, this was really nice to get a win for them tonight.
You give a lot of credit to the players. You know, I know that those guys have a lot of pride in playing for the Nashville Predators and, you know, how much they all enjoyed really living in the city and being part of the community. And the fact that, you know, the focus level that we play with tonight, the intensity level, the effort level was there. And I think that, you know, it speaks volumes about the guys and the pride that they take in wearing the jersey, but also being part of the community. So, you know, hopefully, you know, people are proud of it and some people that are having some tough times that have been affected by the tornado, you know, hopefully this was something that, you know, could take people away for a couple hours and give the city something to be proud of.
So it was an emotional night at Bridgestone Arena. Again, a quality win, a win the Preds could be proud of in the city as well. Everybody sporting the Nashville Strong t-shirts and really a good sense of community there. From a hockey standpoint, I liked Matt Duchene said, hey, we look dangerous on Thursday night. And that was something that the team felt that they hadn't had in a little while, at least during that three-game skid. It was a tough bit of a stretch there. The 8-3 loss to Edmonton on Monday, you follow that up on the second half of the back-to-back with a 3-1 loss in Minnesota. And then to go in and beat Dallas, a team that they hadn't beaten the Predators since Game 3 of the playoffs last season. So that was a good little span there as you go back against the division rival. But a good showing for the Predators on Thursday night. And I think that's just one more example of what they're capable of when they play up to the level that they certainly know that they can reach. Mm-hmm. And it's just been, as we've said all season long, it's been on again, off again. But that was another example of the way that they're capable of playing here down the stretch. And they're going to need to continue to have outings like that.
And that's something we can talk to Pierre LeBrun about in our third segment is, like you said, you see a good effort and you think, this is how this team should be playing. And then it seems to be followed by two or three efforts of that not being the case. And just 30 seconds quickly on those other three games since we last spoke to you, because all of a sudden the podcast curse is reversed. We're only speaking after wins now and the losing's happening at other times. So there was a 3-2 loss to Colorado on Saturday. I think the controversy was that probably was the Predators' second best game of the week, I think pretty easily, honestly. And, of course, we all know the controversy that came out of that. The potentially tying goal by Dante Fabbro was disallowed because Colin Blackwell was ruled to have interfered with the goalie. And for those who maybe missed this, the reason that play could not be challenged was because a penalty had been called. It was not as simple like, oh, waved off for interference. Now, the quick count.
The waved off for incidental contact is a situation where you could review it in that place. It's negated because the official, as you said, decided to immediately call a goaltender interference penalty on the play.
And it's easy to say after replay, oh, well, look, you know, he was pushed in or, you know, he was trying to stop. It was outside the crease. I hear all those factors. I mean, again, I concur with a lot of those factors. And I think to take the referee's side, which I rarely do, but I think Dan O'Halloran sees just a huge collision, sees a goaltender go flying, and makes the call. Now, the counter to that would be, should you not do it that way? Should you wait, wave it off, go to video review, and then be able to assess the penalty? Probably. But again, unfortunately, and Hines said this after the game, doesn't really matter what you think. And here's the way that I was able to best describe it, even to myself when I was thinking about this. Think as if any other penalty occurred on the ice, right? Think as if a tripping minor had been called seconds before and then the Predators had shot the puck into the goal. You wouldn't be sitting here thinking, we should review that. Like, that was a goal. Well, no, because you know as soon as a penalty is called and then that team that took the penalty plays the puck, the whistle blows. That's essentially what happened in that play. I think that maybe explains it a little bit better. So it's not as if, in a sense, there wasn't even a goal, because as soon as the penalty happened, then that meant the puck had been played. Then they're not able to review it. So yeah. I agree. Probably long term, something that could be changed, that could be looked at, could be altered. But that's how they go down in that game.
I saw some complaints that saying that why aren't they challenging? Why isn't John Hines challenging? It's not a reviewable play in that sense.
Correct.
So you can disagree with the rule all you want. Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the wrong call, but that's unfortunately what the rule is in that case.
Edmonton, believe it or not, the Predators actually won in Corsi 4 in all three periods. I sent it to someone else after the game and was just like, LOL. Like, I mean, like, what are you even supposed to do with this game? It's 3-3 going into the third period. Pecorini had not played since January the 21st and looked like it. I think he'd played two of his better games going into that. contest against Edmonton, and then simply was beaten by Leon Draisaitl, was beaten by the Oilers' power play. They blow up the score. You lose a tough one there. And then Minnesota, we'll touch about this more later on in the show, but wow, all of a sudden have those games become big. The Predators will play them again on March the 15th in Minnesota. Also the second half of a back-to-back again, which is tough. And then they will conclude the regular season at home against Minnesota on April the 4th. I was thinking to myself about this earlier. Almost every year since you and I have been covering this team, the final day of the regular season has meant something. Based on seeding, based on who they will play, looks like it's going to happen again when they host the Minnesota Wild on April the 4th.
I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, and it hardly ever happens, but it happened a few years ago with Colorado and St. Louis on the last day of the regular season. It was essentially a play-in game.
Yeah.
The winner got in, the loser was out. Not saying that that's going to happen in Nashville, but it's certainly a possibility.
But at the very least, could impact who that they play. And again, quickly on that, so Dean Evason, formerly the head coach of the Milwaukee Admirals, is now their interim head coach. I think that's potentially the scariest game from a Predators perspective in the sense that they did such a good job defensively in front of the net. Nashville just could not generate offense all night long. He, meaning Evason, has changed the way the Wild played enough that you're going to have to find a way to break through and change your offensive zone structure. So Hines has two games to be able to figure out how to do that. And all of a sudden, I was discounting the Wild, 2 weeks ago? Now all of a sudden, both of those games are really big ones.
They're right back in it. Hey, before we move on into the next segment, did want to get out some information as far as Nashville Strong is concerned and the tornado relief in the city and throughout Tennessee. We know we have a lot of local listeners, but we've also got a lot of listeners around the continent and around the world, and some that had reached out and asked, hey, how can I help? There's lots of information on Preds.com right now. NashvillePredators.com/NashvilleStrong is where you can find a lot of information. There's also a press release on the website that has plenty of info there. The Nashville Strong t-shirts, NashvilleLockerRoom.com. We know that's an option if you want to help support in that way. And then if you're local, there's certainly a lot of different ways that you can drop off donations, either monetary or supplies that are certainly much needed. And Preds and Threads, of course, the Preds Foundation event coming up on March 17th, that will now benefit Middle Tennessee tornado relief efforts. So again, all kinds of information there on NashvillePredators.com. And go ahead and check that out. Certainly a lot of ways that you can get involved. And as we said before, it's not just days or weeks, but certainly months and probably even years before the effects of the tornado are no longer felt. So certainly do what you can in that sense.
And finally here, Brooks, Calvin, and I saying thank you. I was truly touched and blown away by the people that emailed and reached out and texted. I had donations given in my name by vendors that we just use. Really appreciate that again for not only just earlier in this week, but in the days and months to come, all of you who have helped and reached out, we truly appreciate that.
Yeah.
So
texts, phone calls, emails, a lot of help from around the league. Other teams have made donations as well. Minnesota giving $50,000 in total. Craig Leopold and his wife, Helen, combining there. And then the league matching that with $50,000. Some other teams as well making some donations. So we certainly have felt your support. We really do appreciate it. It means a lot. To know that, yes, we are rivals in a sense with a lot of these other clubs, but when something like this happens, it is one big hockey family, and we certainly have felt the support, and it is much appreciated.
Up next, a whole segment about hockey here on the Preds Official Podcast. We'll talk about where the Preds fit into the playoff race and bring you the Milwaukee Minute. That's all up next on the POP on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Preds Official Podcast, ESPN 102.5 The Game. For Brooks and Calvin, I'm Thomas. Thanks for sticking with us. Well, we've done it again. We've talked too long in our first segment, so now it's time for a shorter than normal second segment. And this is the one we were the excited about the most.
Well, we're still excited about it.
Classic us. Classic us.
You know what you're getting.
So we were just looking up sports club stats, a resource you and I have used from time to time. I soon will be recreating the page on NashvillePredators.com that looks at the playoff matchups, potential percentages, and such.
Always a fan favorite, at least in our office.
Yes, at least we like it. But one thing that they do, which is kind of interesting, is they just use a model to run the season thousands of times. So if the season were played out, like I just said, thousands of times, here's the most likely percentages of what could occur. And they have a tool that you were just pointing to, which is interesting, that goes to show, okay, if the Preds went 7-6-2 over the rest of the season, or if they went 15-0 over the rest of the season, here are the chances to make the playoffs, here are the chances of where they'd finish. It's pretty interesting to see. If you're looking for like a number to keep in your mind, it's like 95 points or so. If the Preds can get to 95 points, they're almost certainly going to make it, at least at this point in the season. It gets interesting once you start like saying, okay, well, what if they went just 8-6-1? Well, if you believe it or not, they went 8-6-1. They still have a 42% chance to make the playoffs as of this recording. So it's interesting to see just as the road ahead really starts to become crystal clear and you start to think to yourself all of a sudden, got 6 home games left. You know, when it really starts to get fine, have a finality like that, interesting to see, you know, what needs to be done over the course to make it in. That's all you got to do. You just have to get in.
Well, yeah. So, and as you say, if the Preds get 95 points, it's almost a guarantee. If you go down even as close as 90 points, at least as, again, as of this recording on Friday, March 6th, if you finish with 90 points, you're looking at a 20-ish percent chance to get in. So how quickly even 5 points the rest of the way goes. So you want to say, okay, let's give the Preds an 82.4% chance to get in. What record is that? 8-4-3. I would say a record around there, 4 to maybe 5 regulation losses. And if you're doing that,
winning essentially 2/3 of your games,
winning, yes. So all things considered, I would say you'd really like to have 8, 9, 10 more wins the rest of the way to really be not a guarantee, but to feel safer.
And here's the positive and the negative of the NHL that we have been given. As we touched on in the first segment, the Preds have 2 games against the Wild. They have 1 game against the Jets. They have 1 game against the Coyotes. They are done with the Flames, who are another team that are right around there in the wild card that they've been chasing. They're done with the Canucks as well. They're also in that conversation. That goes back and forth, meaning they could be a 3-point game. You could give them a point even though you get a win. Conversely, you've got other teams that will be playing each other, and that could help you out. But then it also means one of them has to get 2 points. I remember that's always when you really start to look ahead to like the final 2 or 3 games of the season. You're like, okay, great. If the Preds do this, they will get this spot. They will be in. And then all of a sudden you look ahead and you're like, wait, 2 teams play each other. That means at a minimum 2 points are being handed out, and potentially 3 will be handed out to 2 teams.
And as we record, 2 teams. As we record this on Friday afternoon, 4 teams have 74 points, including the Predators. Yeah. I think John Hines probably said it best the other night in Minnesota. Again, that was the 3rd loss in a row for the Predators, and you're not feeling good about yourselves. But at the same time, if you look at the standings, they were still right there. And he said, you know what? It's probably going to come right down to the very end of the season as long as everybody keeps pace with each other. I don't, and anything can happen, but the way that all of these teams have been going that are all right there with 74, 75 points, they're probably all still going to be right there. I don't know that anybody's going to go on a 10-game winning streak. I don't know that anybody's going to go on a 10-game losing streak. Yeah. It really probably will come down to the final day or final week of the regular season for most, if not all, of those clubs.
Well, and just last week, it was the teams just above the Preds that had lost 2 or 3 games in a row. The Jets, for example. The Coyotes went on a long losing spell, and it was the Preds that were winning. And now that has simply inversed. Again, like you're saying, all of these teams are playing a lot of 500 hockey if you look at a longer sample size. So it'll be very interesting to see where they end up. And I think the question is, of course, you know, to the optimistic listener's mind, well, is this going to be like 2017? If they just get into the wild card, you know, can they really wreak some havoc? I will say this. Number one, I'm really starting to come around to the fact that the Predators seem to match up better with Central Division teams than they may anyone else. Mm-hmm. Outside of the Metro. Get the Stanley Cup final and play a Metro team and you're golden. But in all sincerity, I mean, think about how the Predators were able to sweep the Blues and do so in the style of how they played. The Stars are very similar to the Blues, in my opinion. So under Hines, you're 1-for-1 so far. Now, by the time a lot of people listen to this, the result from the Stars will have probably played out. But again, I think that you've played better against Central Division teams overall than you have against some of the Pacific Division teams. And against you having against some of the teams in the East, now that you need to think about that as well. So I do think there is a validity to, if you're able to match up against the right Central Division team, the travel is less, and a lot of teams, including the Predators, you know your divisional opponents. You know them well, and honestly, a lot of times you build your team to play well against those opponents.
Sports Club Stats is great to look at, as we said. Thomas will work on that webpage coming up here quite soon, and that'll be another stop for you.
Waiting for the Preds to get officially back into a playoff spot. Yes. They were for like 2 hours the other night.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good feeling.
It was a nice 2 hours.
But so those are some tools if you'd like to look. Hey, if you're like, you know what, all those numbers make my brain hurt, just win. And the Preds got to win probably 8, 9, 10 more games to really give themselves a good chance here.
Yeah, so coming up, you've got one of the longest road trips of the season, and definitely the remaining one at Dallas, then a trip through the Eastern Conference, Montreal, Toronto, Columbus, and then at Minnesota. The Minnesota game is the biggest one by far of those five. I still think you're minimum of 6 points if you beat Minnesota, 7 to 8 if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll see. I still think finally two Central Division teams claim both wild cards. I still think it's either Jets Preds or Jets or Preds Wild.
The Wild
or Jets Wild.
The Wild West is going to live up to its name the rest of the way. Hey, let's take a minute. Do the Milwaukee minute.
Milwaukee, here I come from Nashville, Tennessee.
Gosh, I missed that song. Hey, the ads, guess what? They're still the best team in the AHL. Shocking, right? Michael McCarron, thanks to him, a 3-2 overtime win on Wednesday over the Texas Stars. He scored the tying goal in the third period before winning it in the extra session. Rem Pitlick, he also scored. He's up to 20 goals this season. Remember, he had a bit of a tough start up there. No longer the case for Rem. Daniel Carr, Cole Schneider, and Tommy Novak lead the ads in scoring. And Ellie Tolvanen is now up to 18 goals and 33 points on the season, most of which have come over the last month or so. So Ellie is heating up there as well. The ads have 39 wins and 86 points. Again, still tops in the American Hockey League as their season continues on here, the top affiliate there for the Predators. Up next, TSN Hockey Insider and senior NHL columnist for The Athletic, Pierre LeBrun, is on the line. Great chat with him coming up. This is the Predators official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to the Predators official podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app and, of course, wherever you find your favorite podcast. Brooks Bratton and Thomas Willis of NashvillePredators.com back with you for segment 3 here on episode 76. And we are pleased to be joined now by a friend of the show, his second career appearance on the POP, TSN Hockey Insider and senior NHL columnist for The Athletic, Pierre LeBrun, is kind enough to join us. Pierre, welcome back to the show. Happy March to you, the final full month of the regular season. How are you?
It's an honor to be on, and kudos to the Neil Young introducing us into the segment here, by the way. Great Canadian legend. Neil Young. Now, did you guys know about Neil Young's father? I want to know.
Oh, this is good. We're starting with trivia. I don't know about Neil Young's father.
You are our only hope. Brooks is the music aficionado, so if he doesn't know, I do not know.
Yeah, well, Neil Young's father, Scott Young, was in Canada, a famous author, journalist, wrote a bunch of hockey books that a lot of Canadian kids grew up reading, and was also on the original panel for The Hot Stove, the original Hot Stove, on Hockey Night in Canada.
So see,
that was Neil Young's father.
Now someone can say they actually learned something from this podcast. So thank you, Pierre.
I was just going to say to our listeners, don't say we never taught you anything, but it's Pierre LeBrun who does it. So thanks for that. That was awesome.
I figured you'd like that. And by the way, before we get going on a serious note, I just want to send out all my thoughts and prayers to everyone affected by the tornado this week in your part of the world. We were talking about it a lot at the NHL GM meeting in Boca Raton, and it was scary to see the images, and Nashville is one of my favorite places in the world, so it was really disheartening to see all that, and hope everyone's fighting through the recovery here.
Thanks for that, Pierre. That's very kind. I'm sure everyone will appreciate hearing that, and as you said, it's been a crazy week here in Nashville, and it's bit of a crazy week, crazy time around the hockey world as well. We've just come off of the trade deadline recently. That has passed. I'm curious, for someone like yourself, have you gotten back to somewhat of a normal sleep schedule at all? Or you've been at the GM meetings too. How has that kind of worked for you the last little bit?
Yeah, it's really the 3 or 4 weeks leading in the trade deadline are pretty crazy. My wife certainly can't wait for the trade deadline to be over. I'm a pretty useless human being. I wouldn't say I'm that useful in a way around the year, but certainly around trade deadline, it creeps the new lows. And so she's always happy to have the trade deadline come and go by. And the, you know, the gym meetings in Boca Raton are a nice little, I always look forward to it because the weather's so nice. And I just look forward to it because it's so interesting to hear from all the GMs in one place over a 3-day span. And everyone seems a bit more relaxed too. So I always look forward to that.
Palm trees and sunshine always help. I'm curious, before we jump into the GM meetings and your chat with our general manager, David Poile, let's go back to the deadline for just a second. What did you think particularly of Nashville's decision to largely remain quiet and stick with their current group there at the trade deadline moving forward here?
I think it was the only decision to make. I mean, I think it would have been foolish to add because you just don't know, you know, if you're Nashville, if you're going to make the playoffs. And I don't know that there's one move out there that's worth a second round pick that is going to, you know, guarantee you those 2 or 3 extra points in the standing. So you're probably spending bad money, I think, if you add, because of how precarious your position is in the standings. On the flip side, I know there are some people around the industry that felt maybe, you know, the Predators should have sold on their UFAs because they may not make the playoffs. You know, we're talking about Craig Smith and Mikael Granlund. I disagree with that. I think that the Predators had shown over the last month that they were starting to come to life, that they were in the race. And if you're in the race and you're playing better, I think it's enough incentive for David Poile to do exactly what he did, which is stand pat. It's just that, and David and I kind of chuckled about this when we sat down together at GM meetings, he's just not used to it. He's not used to being that quiet at the trade deadline. And it's almost like, I don't know if someone hid his phone away or what, but I think it's the right choice. I mean, I don't think it was time to be a buyer because I don't know if the Predators have it or not this year. But at the same time, they're close enough where you want to give that current group a chance to at least try and get in.
That's a great lead into this question, which is, you recently did a Q&A with David Poile for The Athletic. What sticks out to you from that piece? What should our listeners look for if they want to give that a click?
Well, I would say probably the question that I was most eager to ask, and also the one I knew that would be not the one that David Poile would look forward to getting from me. But I've known David for a long time, and I appreciate his candor. And I asked him about the future, you know, and David's been around a long time, and certainly the game of hockey is lucky for that. But I was just curious whether, you know, he had made certain plans with ownership in Nashville, you know, as far as transition or the exit plan. And I was interesting to get his answer because I hadn't seen him talk about this before, at least in this vein. And he said that, yes, that he had talked to ownership and that both ownership, he said, and himself believes he can still do the job for a couple more years. And David said, you know, he hopes that when the exit does come, that that's in a positive note. I think we all know what that means in terms of what he's always chased and what the Predators have chased now for several years in terms of playoff success. So I thought that was interesting because, you know, listen, it's been an amazing career for him. He's won the most games of any GM in NHL history. But I also think he's earned the right to enjoy retirement at some point. And it just doesn't seem like that's going to be quite yet, and that's good. I also believe that he's still got his fastball, so that's good to hear.
A good chat there with David at the general manager's meetings. You speak to a lot of others as well. We saw the headlines this week. I guess the emergency backup goaltender situation was certainly a hot topic with the story of David Ayers and the Carolina Hurricanes. The decision, I guess, to really not do a whole lot on that. That or anything else stick out to you over the last week or so here at the general manager's meetings about what we could look for, what the GMs are feeling about the game and what we could look for in the coming weeks and months here?
Yeah, well, they did make, I mean, certainly one key rule change after debating it for several years, but they decided to tweak the offside rule for next year. Now, it still requires the blessing of the competition committee, which is where the NHLPA has a voice. But I don't see why the competition committee would stand in the way of this little tweak. And the tweak is that basically, as the GMs announced it to us, they're going to a break in the plane definition of offside, which is to say that You know, so far this year, there have been 14 goals wiped off the board when a player had one of his skates up in the air crossing the blue line on the zone entry. And that play next year will be a legal zone entry. So obviously will result in a few more goals. Also going to result in fewer offside video challenges, which I think is all good in terms of speeding up game time. So that was the most notable rule change. I will tell you, though, that aside from the salary cap news that we got and the NHL announcing that the cap will be between 84 and 88.2 million next year, I think it's going to be closer to 84 on the low end. You know, the bigger story were certainly the questions about the coronavirus concerns and where this is all headed, you know, in our lives and in all sports leagues and how leagues are going to try to address it. And, you know, Commissioner Gary Bettman was very careful to try to, you know, not add to the panic, as he said, but also stress that the league is talking to the CDC and constantly trying to get updates as to where all this is headed. And, you know, it's reality, right? You have to deal with it. In fact, I think while we were at the GM meeting of the league, I'm told by one source had a call with the White House about it. There was a call with the other three Big Four sports leagues about, you know, how they're all going to approach this together. So that was certainly the sobering, I would say, the eye-opening part of the week is the concerns, you know, of the virus and how it's going to affect the sports league. So we'll see where that goes.
We're speaking with Pierre LeBrun of TSN and The Athletic and RDS. You can follow him on Twitter at Pierre V. LeBrun. Pierre, let me ask you this. On the Predators' resume for this season, they have a sweep of the Blues. They have a sweep of the Capitals. But then they have losses to the Ducks and the Kings. And it feels like sometimes it's win two, lose two, win two, lose two. And even though things have been maybe generally better under the new head coach, John Hines, I mean, what do you make of this team? What are they and what do they need to do over the final 5 weeks or so to hopefully get that playoff spot?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, they're kind of baffling, really, in terms of the inconsistencies. And, it, you know, as you mentioned, it cost Peter Laviolette a heck of a coach's job, which I would have never predicted when the year started, I will tell you that. I think there's some top players on this team that just have not been as good as they need to be. You know, I think of Brian Johansson. I think of Matt Duchene offensively. Obviously, the goaltending in the first half really struggled, but it's come around in the second half. But that was an area of concern for me for quite a while. But at the end of the day, you know, this is a team that should be, you know, better offensively than it has been. And it's just surprising to me that, you know, the inconsistencies throughout the group and a lot of the core players here throughout the year. You know, I just thought this is a veteran team that players that have done a lot of things, but just be middle of the pack as we record this in goals per game. That's surprising to me.
So let me ask you this quickly as a follow-up. To you, does that then mean it needs to change for next season? Do you consider this year to potentially be a fluke? I mean, because so much of the group, it would seem, is on course to be the same for next season and the years to come. How do you, what do you think that means for the Predators longer term?
Yeah, I mean, there's basically only two UFAs and Smith and Granlund. And right now, those two guys are playing really well. So you actually want those guys back, I would argue.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's a difficult thing. I think if the team misses the playoffs, I think the organization has to sit back and take a deep look at the structure of the core. But this is a crazy thing. We've had teams like this that sort of meander their way and then just slide in as the wild card and then create havoc in the playoffs. So I guess my point to you guys is that I'm not ready to answer that now because I don't know that the story is complete with this team, no matter what's happened this year, right? And getting in is getting in. And I just feel like this team would be a handful if they did get in. So I'd be more comfortable answering that question afterwards. But certainly if they do miss out, that's a huge disappointment for an organization that had Stanley Cup aspirations again this year. And I just feel like, and listen, David Poyle's made some pretty big trades in his past, that you would have to look at some apple for apple core player changes, in my opinion, if they're out. That's not easy to do. I mean, it's hard to make trades, but I would certainly look at that.
Pierre, let's end on this, and one player who certainly has not underperformed as the captain, Roman Josi, and he's always been kind of flirting with that Norris Trophy conversation. He's received votes before, but this year I would argue is certainly his best chance at that, and we kind of live in our bubble here with our gold-colored glasses in Nashville and say, oh, he's fantastic. He's the best D-man in the league, right? But from a national perspective, we know John Carlson is another guy who's out there, but how do you see that potentially playing out and maybe Roman Josi's chances at the Norris Trophy this season?
He certainly, I believe, will be a top three finalist. He's certainly going to be on my ballot. I'm among the PHWA voters, I guess, to vote for the Norris. I haven't decided yet who I'm going to place number one. I want to see the last month of the season play out. And in particular, I want to see what kind of finish some of these guys that are in contention bring and how it impacts their team ultimately. I mean, teams making the playoffs or not making the playoffs do impact individual awards. And I think rightfully so, right? I mean, your greatness should have a positive impact on where your team is in the standings as much as you can impact. But I certainly think Josi and Carlson right now are battling for that number one finalist job, finalist nomination. Two other names I would say that are high on my list for me. One is Victor Hedman, who I just saw again last night in Tampa before flying home. And he's been unbelievable. And again, not, you know, the offensive numbers are third in the league behind Carlson and Josi, but like Josi, you know, the all-around game with Edmund, and he's a former Norris Trophy winner. And the other guy who gets very little mention, it's kind of weird because they just won the cup last year, but Alex Pietrangelo is on pace for a career high offensively after playing all these years. And of course, is probably what he's better known for is a shutdown role anyways in St. Louis. So those are four names. I have to put down five names on my ballot, but I'd be pretty surprised if those four names aren't on it.
He's Pierre LeBrun. He's got Neil Young facts. He's got Neil Young's father facts, and he's got hockey facts. So, Pierre, thanks for joining us today, and for a second time as well. We appreciate it.
Hey, it's a pleasure, Brooks and Thomas. Thanks, guys.
The Preds official podcast continues in just a moment as we answer your Twitter questions right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds official podcast. I'm Thomas. He's Brooks. Thanks for stopping by for segment four of episode 76 of the POP. And we have a winner. We have a giveaway for those of you who went to Apple Podcast or your other favorite podcast service and left a comment. I put it that way because apparently you can't leave a review on Spotify. I didn't know that until a listener pointed that out.
Leave a comment.
However, several of you did. We appreciated it. And our winner is of a Predators autograph puck.
Loyal listener Rich, who asks questions all the time. He left a comment. So Rich is going to get an autographed puck. So,
a newer fan. You deserved it, Rich.
Yeah. So thanks to all of you who left comments. We certainly do appreciate the kind words. But the giveaways don't stop here, do they, Thomas?
Sure don't. A Predators representative will be in touch, Rich, by the way. The next giveaway is a Victor Arvidsson bobblehead, which was given away on Monday night at the Preds and Oilers game. What do they have to do to win it?
The way that you win this Victor Arvidsson bobblehead, Thomas, is by using hashtag Preds Podcast on Twitter. Got to be following both of us. Tag us in it. Tell us how or why did you start listening to this program? We're 76 episodes in. You got to start somewhere. How did we just barge right into your lives once a week? How did that happen?
Come one, come all. Even if you started listening in episode 75. You are cherished, you are welcome, and you have the opportunity to win a Victor Arvidsson bobblehead. All right, let's get to these questions.
This is an environment of welcoming.
You can get the heck out of here. That's an office reference for you. Anyway, others of you used hashtag Preds Podcast to ask questions. We have several of them, and of course, as we always do when we get to the fourth segment, limited time. So here we go through them. Kevin, Seth, others wants to know, could we start to see Holzer take on a bigger role?
Corbinian Holzer, of course, making his Predators debut against the Dallas Stars. He and Jared Tenorti on a pairing.
After he made his debut on the Preds Official Podcast,
yes,
which was bigger, we'll let him decide.
Sure.
We can't say for sure.
Another ginger in the mix. That's always good. John Hines said, hey, Corbinian Holzer, Jared Tenorti, they took up a lot of real estate. He liked what they saw from him against the Dallas Stars. does he stick in there? I don't know. I feel like he's part of the rotation. I don't know that he's taken anyone's job.
Wow, look, we did not discuss this ahead of time. We have a very similar answer. So I think one of the smarter things Peter Laviolette did in his time here as the head coach was to approach specifically the 2017 playoffs, looking at his full deck, his full roster, and saying, this team plays this way, therefore these are the players that I'm going to play. Conversely, now I'm in this series, that matches more up with these guys, with this style of play. Every win is important. Every series is totally different. Just because you beat one team doesn't mean you'll beat another. And it's not in the sense where you're really trying to develop chemistry over long periods of time. So I'm referring to Harry Zolnerchuk, for example. We did not expect him to play in game one in Chicago. He had not been playing down the stretch, but the Predators staff looked at that matchup and said, this is a speed game. We want a smaller, faster guy. They played him. Conversely, love him or hate him, Cody McLeod played in the second round, scored a game winner against the Blues. I think Corbinian Holzer's more like that. I said to you, like, I wanted to see the size of a Tenorti and a Holzer against a slower, more defensively structured Dallas team. Dallas only really wants to score about two goals a game. That's oftentimes all they need to score in a game. I don't think you're putting Holzer and Tenorti out against a run-and-gun speed team, whoever that is. Is that Vancouver? Maybe even that's even the Jets, to a sense. They're a smaller, faster team, not as big and strong as they used to be. So I was very encouraged to see that Holzer is an option, however, if and when you need him again.
And between Holzer and Tenorti as well, they may not be the best stats guys, but I love what they bring from a physical standpoint. Yeah. It was Tenorti who stood up to Robert Bortuzzo in St. Louis. He said hello to Corey Perry on Thursday night. I think that's an element that you still need in your lineup, and I really like guys like that in there for those reasons. Loyal listener Rich,
yes,
we just won a puck.
Winner.
With the announcement of a higher salary cap, what's the likelihood that David Poile can keep this team together and continue to make runs if there is extra cap space? So you heard Pierre LeBrun say...
I was just going to say, he kind of got his question answered by Pierre.
Yeah, so he thinks it's going to be on the lower end, $84 million. Yes, we know that Roman Yossi's deal is kicking in, so that's a $9 million deal.
Yeah.
And as we've talked about before, you're probably not going to be able to keep both Craig Smith and Mikael Granlund. They're looking. They're at the point where they're probably looking for that last big deal.
If you get enough of a jump to 84, 85, maybe you could keep both. Now, the other thing to consider is, and Pierre was referring to this, is that the Predators do not have a lot of players to sign, right? Like, you'll see a team, you know, they only have 9 forwards under contract, but they've got to sign 3, 4, 5 forwards for the course of the season. The Predators are not in that case. They have a lot of opportunity. They have a lot of guys already signed. They only need to sign 1 or 2 guys. I'll be interested to see. I think we cannot answer that until after the season. Because, for example, Austin Watson has not played very much recently. Is that a long-term thing? Would he need to be traded? Would he still be on this roster? Who knows, right? Like, we don't know right now. So if you're losing guys, maybe you could re-sign a Granlund and a Smith, or maybe you'd want to go get somebody else. So, yes, I think it helps, of course, to always have more salary cap, but it's kind of a trend that's expected to a little bit as well. It has gone up every single year since the salary cap was instituted, I guess, in 2005, right? So not too shocking to see it go up even more recently.
And as Pierre said, there's still so many questions regarding
the future.
It's just
so hard. I love that question, but it's so hard to know right now.
Sure, and if you make it in, it's a totally different situation than if you missed the playoffs. Sarah said...
It's a good one.
An emergency backup goaltender-related question. So we kind of mentioned that with Pierre. David Ayers, Carolina. It was a great story. I'm sure you've probably seen it. But Sarah wants to know when an e-bug... We'll use the abbreviation. I love the abbreviation. An e-bug is needed last minute. How does his jersey come together so quickly? So I actually asked Jeff Camilio, Predators assistant equipment manager, this question. I said, hey, what's the deal? At home, the Preds have a jersey ready because they know if they need that gentleman, whoever it is that night in the building, they have a jersey ready. On the road, you've got probably the jersey with numbers on it already. If you need someone on the road, if that happens, you're hoping there's a heat press because you can make a nameplate really quick. And it's just something you got to do on the fly. You got to know who the guy is, and you got to be prepared to do it. You'd say, well, wow, how are they going to get a jersey together that quick? You'd be surprised. I've seen our equipment guys do a lot of things that you don't think is able to be done quickly.
Good with a needle and a thread.
And it's done quickly. Yeah, they're really good at figuring things out. So it would be a high-pressure situation, but they would be able to put something together pretty quick.
Sheldog finally wants to know, what is Corbinian Holzer's nickname? He introduced himself as Corby and actually had the fun fact of saying only his mother calls him Corbinian. So he likes to go by Corby And then we jokingly have been calling him King Corbinius, but that's a free one because it just seems like with a name that long, that's what he should be called.
Let's
send
go.
Us home.
I like Corby. Let's go with Corby. Hey, by the way, Shell Dog, congrats on your engagement loyal listener who posted on Twitter, met her now fiance at a Predators playoff game.
Ah, congrats.
So congrats to the happy couple. Here's another happy couple sending you home. For Thomas Willis, you can follow him at Tommy Willis on Twitter. I'm Brooks Bratton. You can follow me at Brooks Bratton on Twitter and Instagram. Tweet us anytime, hashtag Preds Podcast. Go win that RV bobble. Head and follow at PredsNHL to see the best Predators content first. Thanks so much to Pierre LeBrun for joining us here on episode 76 of the POP. Hey, Nashville strong, NashvillePredators.com. All sorts of ways that you can help with tornado relief. We certainly do appreciate the support. Thomas Willis, another POP down.
Calvin's here. I think that makes us a trio. I don't know if that's better or worse. See you guys.
Bye, friends.